The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Why don't we get started? I just heard that there's kind of a glitch that most of the one else didn't get the notice, so I'm glad you guys did. My name is Jeffrey Lovers. I teach administrative law, I'm also the director of our Europe summer program. So if anybody is interested in going to Paris right now, we want to go over that cut. In the summer, it'll be fine. Paris, Strasbourg, London, and Brussels for course credit. That's not the subject of today's meeting. I'm one of the co-directors of the practice group that's concerned with public law. It has a much more formal name. It is the group on public law and government, civil rights and liberties, disability, and education law. So if you're interested in any of those fields, you're in the right place. There's other meetings going on now in the building. And I'm one of the co-directors. Professor Jamie Raskin is the other co-director. He's going to be here. He said he'd try to be here around 12:30. He's giving a speech on the main campus right now. But we formed these groups to try to help. Oh, I see some reinforcements. Professor Vermeil's coming. Good. Come on down, Steve.
Sorry, I'll sit up here.
Okay. We formed these groups to, in recognition that, you know, the job market has gotten tougher these days for our students. And we wanted to leverage the resources that we had here at the law school to help you think about your career path early on in your law school career, and also help you find a job as you go through law school. So we want to have not only our faculty, our full-time faculty that teach in these various areas to help you, but also our adjunct faculty and our alums, because we have a lot of alums around Washington and around the country who are willing to help in various ways. So, you know, we try to plan some events with alumni, we try to plan programs, we do some resume reviews, coaching, so to speak, and other techniques to try to help students get jobs. So, in this group, we have a very large number of faculty members who signed up for this group, including Professor Vermeil in the back, and I made a list of them. Might have made it up because the turnout's a little lower than might be today. So those are all the faculty members who are signed up, and I put their subject matter areas so you'll see what their specialties are. But you probably also know that there are a number of events coming up this week and next week, that you might want to take part in. One is a public interest open house. I did make some copies of this too, maybe not quite enough, but it's going on here. There's the public interest law. This would be a great place to meet some potential employers in the public interest area. And of course, we have Opportunities Week coming up soon. After Monday, we have series programs on the rest of the week. On Tuesday, there's something called Looking Back, Advice from 3Ls and Recent Grads. And then there's on Wednesday, there's an externship career fair preparation, along with free headshots if you need a photo. And then on the 15th, the OCPD externship resume review drop-in all day. Opportunities Fair table talk in the afternoon. And then on the 16th, I guess that continues. And the externship fair, which I definitely urge you to attend, is on Wednesday the 21st. You would believe how many employers come to this thing. The whole sixth floor is just filled with employers from the government, from public interest groups, interns, whatever. So it's a great place to make some connections. And they send pretty top, fairly top people to this externship there. So I definitely urge you to go to that. Any questions so far? Okay. The other thing that I wanted to mention is this thing we did on our website called Pathways. And this was an attempt to help students navigate their course choices as they think about their career. So we have a series of things on the list here of subject matters, alphabetical, starting with administrative law, which happens to be first, and going down all the way to the women in the law, LGBT rights, a series of different legal fields, and each one contains information on use of administrative and regulatory law, talks about, you know, what it is, foundational courses, elective courses, some professors who have agreed to be contacted about this pathway anytime. So, you know, we pretty much have a open door policy here at the law school. I think it's one of the best things about WCL. And, you know, if you go on each faculty member's website, you'll see their office hours, or if they don't have office hours, you could just email them and make an appointment. And, you know, we're always happy to talk to students. I think that's something that students don't take advantage of enough. You know, when I was in law school, the professors weren't so approachable. So we, you know, it wasn't really an open door policy. So we were a little intimidated by some of these professors. So we wouldn't take advantage of talking to them. But here, I think you should. Even if you're not even taking a course with them, if you see that they're teaching a course in your field, you should try to get to know them. And then, you know, find out more about the course. And then once you start taking the course, if you want to take it, you always already have a little bit of a relationship with that professor. And that'll come in handy during the semester and afterwards. So this is all an attempt to help you make you sort of think about your career from the beginning. You know, you don't have to decide everything, of course, in your first year or even in your second year, but you should have a sense of what you want to do so you can start getting summer jobs and internships in those areas, meeting professors here, finding some alums on the listing of all the alums that is maintained by, I think it's on the OCPD website, so that you can find alums in the area that you're interested in. And, you know, they've agreed to be listed, so they don't mind talking to you if you want to give them a call or email. So any thoughts? What are you guys thinking? Why did you choose this practice group as opposed to some of the others? Want to work in the government? Who wants to work at the federal government employee? Okay. Why is that? I worked in the government before I came here, and I was sort of influenced, I think, because my father was a government lawyer. I didn't necessarily want to follow in his footsteps, but it just sort of made it seem more familiar. And, you know, he liked his job, so I thought it might be a good place to work. So I worked at a small government agency for 20 years. But then the agency got defunded by Congress. Then I started teaching here. And now the agency's refunded again after 15 years of being dormant, believe it or not. Really unusual story. It's called the Administrative Conference of the United States, ACUS. Short. And look it up on acus.gov. It's a small agency, but they do hire interns from WCL. I insist that they do it. So I'm still active in that organization, and that's just a very small organization. It only has about 15 employees. So it's one of the smallest government agencies, but, you know, there are obviously a lot more. And One thing that I've noticed over the years is people, when they think about working for the government, they think about, I want to work for the Department of Justice, or I want to work for EPA. Well, it's not always so easy to get a job in those agencies, because law students all over the country think the same way. But what you all have understanding of being in Washington is that there are lots of other interesting government agencies that most people don't think about as having interesting legal jobs or legal careers. I mean, take, for example, the Department of Transportation or the Department of Agriculture. It might not be first on your list of a place to work, but they have a lot of really interesting legal issues coming up in the Office of General Counsel, those departments. You know, in transportation, it's everything from, you know, every mode of transportation is regulated by DOT practically. So, you know, you can work on lots of interesting things there. Agriculture has all these regulations about selling animals. So if you're interested in animal rights, you know, it's a good place to work. All food safety, food, they regulate the import of lots of, well, not food, but they do regulate meat. But they regulate the importation of things like plants and animals from other countries to make sure that they're not invasive species and things like that. So, you know, if you're, don't, and also, there are lots of agencies that do have environmental offices beyond the EPA. Because every agency that does anything in terms of federal projects has to worry about doing environmental impact statements under the NEPA law, which covers all the agencies. So most fairly big agencies will have an environmental law office. They'll have offices that are concerned about small business. They'll have offices that are concerned about freedom of information. So, you know, don't just think about the big agencies that we see in the paper every day. Think about some of the other agencies as well. So those are the kind of things that professors here can help you with if you're interested. And then, of course, there's the whole public interest world, which is kind of the, in some ways it's sort of a shadow government because, you know, when administrations change, people come from some of these NGOs and go into government. And then if the administration changes again, they go back into the NGOs. So there's, you hear about revolving door. It's not just between business and government. It's also between NGOs and government. So many of the important NGOs, like Public Citizen and Sierra Club, Environmental Law Institute, and some of these important organizations have people who used to work in the government and probably will work in the government again. So when they go back in the government, they want to bring their best lawyer or the best staff person with them to go into the government. So, you know, Washington is a real networking city. You know, you should never burn any bridges in Washington. You know, because you never know when someone that you're dealing with today and then you've lost track of might come back into some position that, you know, might be interesting to you later on. So, it's important to go to meetings of the Federal Bar Association or the American Bar Association, Administrative Law Section here in Washington. The DC Bar has a lot of interesting programs. They'll have programs like, you know, Meet the General Counsel from the Federal Trade Commission. And so he or she'll show up and, you know, there'll be a brown bag lunch and there'll be 45 people there and, you know, afterwards you can talk to the FCC General Counsel or people who are interested in that area. So one of the things I want to do with our group is to send out notices about these kinds of brown bag lunches and other meetings whenever I see them. So here at WCL we have the Law and Government Program, which is a student organization, is a law and government student organization. And there's also the Law and Government Program writ large, which includes the Law and Government LLM program here.
At WCO, we have about 50 or 60, we have about 60 students who are taking an LLM degree, a master's degree in law and government. About 30% of those are foreign students, but 70% are domestic. And, you know, I work in that program. Ms. Wormiel works in that program. Amy Tenney is one of the directors, and she does a lot of placement work for those students. So we also try to have some events that are open to JD students, such as something we call Inside Washington Tour. So a couple times each semester, we'll organize a tour or group that goes to an agency and meets with top officials there. And they find out what those agencies do. And, you know, it's a good way to get your foot in the door and say, hey, you know, do you have any internship or externship opportunities coming up? Because I'm really interested in what you do.
You know, agencies like to have externs because it's free labor for them. I hate to set foot that way. But meanwhile, you're learning a lot, making connections, hopefully impressing them, and then if there's a job opening later, they'll remember you as sometimes that good extern we have. Just put her resume at the top. So that's kind of the way it works here. Any other thoughts? So those of you who are not interested in working in the government, what brings you here? Anybody?
I'm interested in a broad range of constitutional issues and specifically women issues, but I've studied that for most of my life, really.
Okay.
So I wanted to broaden my horizons.
Okay. Well, you know, of course we have good women in the law program here at law school, and so you can find lots of opportunities there. In terms of constitutional law, I should let Professor Rubio talk a little bit more about that. You know, constitutional law is one of those areas that, you know, people say, I want to get a job in constitutional law. Well, there aren't that many jobs in constitutional law. I mean, you know, it's not going to be finding too many people who come in to your law office and says, I'd like you to take this case because I want you to find this law constitutional. I want you to take this all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, it doesn't really work that way. But, you know, if you're interested in constitutional law and you have a good grounding in constitutional law, that'll come in handy in lots of different situations. If you're working in the government, of course you have to worry about constitutional law issues. Probably have to worry more about statutory interpretation issues, you know. What's the best way to interpret this statute? How will the courts interpret this statute? How much deference will they give to our interpretation of our own statute under the Chevron doctrine? Things like that. So on a day-to-day level, you'll probably be working more with statutory issues than constitutional issues. But always lurking in the background is, gee, are we potentially violating some constitutional right here? What about separation of powers? You know, are we federalism issues between the federal government and the state, preemption. Can we preempt state regulation of this issue if we're a federal agency? Can the state have a different regulation than the federal government has? Well, those are important constitutional questions. So, you want to say anything about that, Steve?
I mean, I just would add that there's a lot of civil rights litigation that takes place under statutes, not under the Constitution. So some of the same things that might interest you as a constitutional law matter can be Title VII discrimination issues, Title IX discrimination issues, fair housing issues, and all kinds of civil rights issues that aren't, they feel like constitutional issues, but they're statutory, not constitutional.
These laws are grounded in the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, in which gave Congress a lot of authority to write anti-discrimination laws. And some of these laws are carried out by other departments. So Title IX, I'm sure you know, is carried out by the Department of Education. They have their Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education that makes sure that, you know, women have equal opportunities in sports and universities and things like that. And Department of Housing and Urban Development obviously regulates fair housing laws. there's a lot of adjudication there. Another thing is, you know, you haven't taken had a chance to take any administrative law related courses. There's an elective you can take next semester, this semester. Anybody signed up for the legislation regulation? Good, okay. So that I think will give you a good introduction to the overall area. Of course, you still should take the regular administrative law course. But now why did I bring that up?
Jeff, I would just add one more thing about constitutional cases, which is I've been giving this advice to people for a long time. A lot of constitutional litigation is done as pro bono work by people
in law firms. Yeah.
Conservative side of things, comparable organizations on the other side, and take on interesting cases pro bono, and that, you know, that sort of enriches your experience and your practice opportunity.
Right, so all the major law firms have big pro bono offices, and they pledge to do a certain number of pro bono cases, and those are the types of cases, if you're a young associate at a law firm, you're not going to be able to go into court on some of the big firm cases that are assigned. The partners are going to do that, but on a pro bono case, you know, a death penalty case or some other constitutional type of case, you know, they might ask you to do that case, and you'll get to do it yourself. So that's a good way to get experience. But what I was going to say, in terms of administrative law, you know, the two big parts of administrative law are rulemaking and adjudication. So to think about, and this, so most agencies have big rulemaking programs. They write regulations. You know, these are the things that appear in the Federal Register, and they. And since Congress isn't passing any laws now, I mean, Congress passed an incredibly low number of laws last year. But agencies, agencies aren't issuing as many regulations as they used to. But still, they're issuing 3,000 or 4,000 regulations a year. Congress is passing, you know, 100 laws a year last year. So EPA, Securities and Exchange Commission, Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, these are the agencies that are just doing most of the lawmaking in the United States. So there's a lot more law being made by federal agencies than by Congress. Similarly, there are a lot more cases being adjudicated by agencies than by our federal courts. You know, the Social Security Administration has a million cases pending, believe it or not. They have about 1,600 or 1,700 administrative law judges around the country who are deciding these cases. There are about 30 agencies that have administrative law judges. Some of those ALJs, they have the name of judge, but they're actually executive branch officers. They have law clerks. And, you know, law students around the country are always applying to, you know, federal courts for law clerks positions. But they don't think about applying to ALJs very often. So you can get a year or 2 year clerkship with an ALJ and get the same kind of experience you'd be getting with a federal court judge, and it's your odds of getting such a clerkship are a lot better. So, you know, I think as you proceed, especially if you continue to be interested in this kind of law, you'll learn more about the structure of government agencies and where the jobs are. It's not always, I mean, there is this USA Jobs site that people use to apply for jobs, but that's not the only way to get a job, you know, in the government, because technically, if a government agency has an opening and you walk in the door that day, assuming you can get by security, and you want to work there, and if they want to hire you, they can just hire you. There's no, it's not a competitive job in the same sense as a lot of other jobs in the government. You don't have to take an exam. The veteran's preference doesn't apply as strongly because there are no points that are assigned to people when they apply for lawyer jobs. They're in a special category called Schedule A jobs, so you don't have to take a test or be certified before they can hire you. Now, most agencies don't like to hire people off the street, but, you know, they could. And so if you met somebody at an agency and at a cocktail party and they said, you know, we have a vacancy in our Office of General Counsel's office that for people who work on Freedom of Information Act issues, and you're interested in that area, you know, you could send in your resume and theoretically be hired. Now, they might want to have a more structured process and use USA Jobs, and a lot of agencies would do that. And some agencies are even more strict, and they have this special honors program, like the Department of Justice, where you have to go through a number of hoops, and it's, you know, only the best applicants tend to get these jobs. But, you know, a lot of jobs are available if you hear of them. And so, you know, the best way is to keep your ears open when you go to some of these meetings. Anybody else want to suggest? Yes?
Still undecided doing government versus nonprofit. So I either want to do one of each. Is there a benefit to starting off with either one?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, of course, the government's nonprofit too. But, you know, I think in terms of, I mean, starting as your career or starting in for summer jobs and externships and things like that, I don't think it really matters which one you do first. I think you should get a taste of each one. Whether you do one in first, I don't think that really matters.
What about career?
Career? Well, you know, I think part of that is based on your financial circumstances. I think, obviously, you know, students have a lot more debt now, and government still pays better than public interest groups for the most part. But you can also get loan forgiveness if you work for either the government or for public interest groups. There are these federal programs that allow, I think if you work for the government for 10 years, you get all of your interest forgiven after that on your loan. You know, I can't remember exactly how the public interest one works, but it, you know, we have some law school programs that forgive loans for public interest work as well, but there are also federal programs that do that. So if you work for a government agency, for a prosecutor, or public interest group, you know, you can get some of your loans forgiven. So that's a great program, and that might help you do either. But whether you do one or the other first, no, I think it's good to get government experience because then you know how the government works. And then if you go into a public interest group, you can be more informed about that. But if you start off in a public interest group, and then you realize, hey, maybe I get more accomplished if I'm inside the government than if I'm outside, you know, pushing on the government. Either way, I think. Any other ideas that anybody has? Yeah.
What about as far as lobbying goes?
Lobbying.
Like, do you have any people who are lobbyists for Republican groups, nonprofits?
We have people who are lobbyists for everything. I mean, in terms of, you know, lobbying is one of those words that sounds like a pejorative word. You know, you don't want to tell your parents I'm marrying a lobbyist. You know? But on the other hand, you know, what is lobbying? It's advocacy.
your cause. You're providing information, and you can lobby Congress, you can lobby the executive branch. So there are registration requirements for lobbying. But you know, we have alums who are lobbyists. Now I don't know whether our information or database indicates that somebody is a lobbyist. You know, I'm not sure. But if they're working for a law firm, chances are they're doing some Washington representation, some other term that's often used to avoid saying you're a lobbyist. I'm a Washington representative for this company, this association. Associations is another thing you should think about. There are a series of books. I should have brought a copy. There's called the Yellow Book. They're online. It's on our website. It's under in the library resources under leadership directories. So there's a series of these yellow books that are basically phone books with now more email addresses of people who work. There's an executive branch yellow book, federal yellow book. There's a congressional yellow book. There's an association one. There's a federal regional office yellow book. There are about 12 of them. And they have lots of information up to date. It comes out every 3 months with new information. So there is one on associations. There's an association of associations, you know, in Washington. And so you would be amazed at the number of associations. I mean, there are associations for everything. A friend of mine once got a job at the Association for Handheld equipment, handheld engine equipment or something like that. So things like leaf blowers and hedge cutters and things like that have their own association because EPA regulates the emissions of these things. So yeah, there are tons of associations. I think lobbying can be an honorable profession. In part, it depends on who you're lobbying for and what your own values are. But I think it's a big thing to learn about. We have courses on. I don't think we have a course on lobbying. We used to have a course on lobbying taught by an adjunct, but we definitely have courses on Congress. I haven't said too much about Congress. But we have Professor Yeomans is running a legislative practicum course. And then we have other adjunct courses on Congress, on legislation. And there are a lot of legislative jobs. So, yes?
Is it difficult to transition from public to private or vice versa?
From government to private? I mean, that's what the revolving door is. And then when we think about the revolving door, it's usually I'm working in the private sector, now I'm going into the government, now I'm going back to the private sector, and that's what we're doing. Revolving door is another one of those things that sounds, people sort of look down on, it's sort of a pejorative, you know. We got to put a stop to this revolving door because, you know, it's just a way of corporations influencing the government by putting their officials into the government, so they're not going to regulate as hard. That's the negative way of looking at it. The positive way of looking at it is you've worked in the private sector and you go into government, you understand better how the private sector works, and vice versa. So we'll never put a stop to the revolving door. There are some ethics rules about it. So for example, there's a requirement that if you're a fairly high official in the government and you go into the private sector, there's a cooling off period where you can't contact your old agency on matters relating to your new employment for a couple of years, things like that. You can't negotiate, if you're in the government, you can't negotiate with a private firm and work on anything that might impact them. So there are a lot of ethics and government rules that relate to that intersection between government and private sector. But you know, I think it's something that happens every day. Now, President Obama has been pretty tough on lobbyists. You know, he he said, I'm not going to hire any registered lobbyists to work in my administration. And that was without regard to whether they're lobbying for business or for public interest. So there are a lot of public interest types who said, why are you restricting me from going working in some agency where I can do some good just because I was a lobbyist for a public interest group? So frankly, I think that was a mistake on the part of Obama to do that. But he, you know, thought that the optics of hiring lobbyists meant that he shouldn't do that.
The one note of caution I would add is the revolving door doesn't work so well between prosecutors' offices and public defenders. You say, gee, I'm going to go, you know, do a year in a prosecutor's office and it'll make me a better public defender. It might, but they won't hire it. It's just a stigma. A lot of public defender services don't trust you if you've done time in prosecuting.
But if you're a lot of prosecutors become judges. But yeah, so I mean that's true. I mean, if you're really identified with one party or one cause, you know, it's going to be a little harder to transition. That's a good question. Anybody else have anything that they're wondering about or? You got early on, yes.
Just in terms of working out with Congress, though, what about working about legislative aides?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of lawyers who do work as legislative aides. Not all legislative aides are lawyers. Not all of our legislators are lawyers either. So, you know, it's interesting that people who write the laws are a lot of them aren't lawyers in this country. But if you look at the staff of any member of Congress or any committee, you'll see a fairly long list of majority staff, minority staff. And now the majority is held by the Republicans, so in the Senate there's going to be kind of a shift, and the Republicans are going to get to hire a lot more staff. So a lot of Democrats, are going to lose their job probably and have to move. But the Republicans get to hire. So there's always this kind of musical chairs in Congress. It goes on when power shifts. But yeah, there are a lot of jobs in Congress. And some of the members tend to hire from their own state or their own district. And the chairs of the committees get to pretty much hire most of the staff members for those committees, the chair and ranking member. So the Republican chairs of the Senate and House committees now get to hire most of the majority staffs themselves. If you have any relationship with your member of Congress, then that's a good way to get a job. And once you get on the Hill, you get a good reputation, you can move around. Any other thoughts? What do you guys think?
Just all the different areas, I guess. I know that this is a general area that I want to go into, but not everything we talked about, I'm kind of interested in learning a little bit more about the distinction between things. So I'm kind of looking to get more information on
I sort of didn't know what I was going to do when I was on 1L.
Any other questions? Steve, you have anything more to add?
No, just know that we're all available to talk and help.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be the beginning of a conversation, not the end.
That's right. And you take advantage of next week's opportunities. So we can keep up to the schedule. If you don't have this, you probably do, but just in case.
Websites, you know, as I said, there are a lot of areas here, and if you're interested in any of these areas on the right here, this will give you a good idea of what kind of courses to think about taking, which, you know, you are starting to think about now. All right. Well, have you all signed up for the practice group? If you haven't, make sure you do. And, you know, tell your friends to, who are interested in this to also sign up. We hope to have a really big list, and whenever we see anything interesting, we'll pass it on to the list. Yes?
Where do we sign up? Online?
There's a lot of information.
On the web page, on the home page, you go under faculty. Top, there's a bunch of different choices, and one of them is faculty practice group.
Right, look in the middle. Why isn't it on that page? Look at the back.
Which page is it on?
It should be right in the middle, under where digital comments is. That's where
it
changed. Go back to the home page.
Cool.
Press click on the icon in the middle, top
click.
Middle.
Yes.
Yeah, then go to faculty
click
from there.
Faculty.
There you go. Right in the middle, top. You just went below it.
Right there.
Yep.
So if you click on that, and then when you go ahead and open it, Jeff. And then in the upper left corner there, it says register.
Yep. And since I wasn't in here, I won't put anybody on the spot, but you did receive one, I think just two emails about our opportunities week. The second one did or does have the registration. So if you forget this, just go back to the email that we sent to you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for coming. Keep in touch.